USA versus Ramirez.
Mr. Beard, you working this Friday?
Yes, as a matter of fact, we are working Fridays for the rest of the fiscal year.
Well, good for you. How about next Friday?
Yes, I'll be working next Friday as well. The real question is who will be working in the new fiscal year, I suppose, on what Fridays. May it please the court, Ms. Calder. What I would like to do is to refocus the court's attention back to the criminal law and to talk about a statutory interpretation case that is presented in this appeal. I would suggest that it's going to focus the court's attention on the proper construction to be given a particular definitional scheme set out at 1101 that talks about what does or does not connote and give rise to an aggravated felony. Now, the issue, I think, has two facets. One is narrow, one is broad. The narrow facet, of course, is simply this. Does the language aggravated felony means murder, rape, sexual abuse of a minor? Is that so encompassing that it would so broad that it would encompass a New York State misdemeanor punishable by no more than 3 months, that is to say misdemeanor sexual abuse, a crime that actually this defendant received no term of imprisonment, no probation, no fine, only a discharge and a court fee. And of course, just briefly to refresh the court's memory, from the briefs, the victim here is, had identified herself as a fiancée, 15 years old. Her mother knew about this. Although we did not put it in the brief, I think the court can take judicial notice that New York law allows for marriage between 14 and 15-year-olds with parents' consent, although I'm not suggesting that that was a defense here that will influence the court's disposition. But the broader issue, and this is why I wanted to come speak with you, and I thank you, is this. Does the court's treatment of the term aggravated felony as a term of art in another subsection of 1101, subsection F, does that require that the court apply that same term of art in an unambiguous provision that we have here? And let me see if I can set the stage a moment. In subsection F of the same definitional scheme set out 1101, the court may recall that there is language that basically allows for the treatment of misdemeanors for which 1 year's in punishment has been levied to be treated as aggravated felonies. Some have speculated it may have been a drafting error because there's some other errors in the legislation. Some have said, I think the government will say this, no, Congress meant by term of art something a little different, something that allowed misdemeanors to be treated as felonies. But the question that I wanted to address, this broader issue, is thinking of aggravated felony as a term of art for purposes of an ambiguous subsection F doesn't mean, certainly doesn't require, does no honor to the unambiguous text in subsection A. Subsection A says aggravated felony means murder, rape, sexual abuse of a minor. I don't know that anyone would stand here and suggest that we have misdemeanor murder, misdemeanor rape, misdemeanor sexual abuse of a minor. I'm not aware of it in any event. And it's our interpretation that the term of art, I hate to say escape hatch, but let's say treatment of the term aggravated felony for subsection F, does not compel the same treatment for subsection A. Instead, I would suggest to the court, Ramirez would suggest to the court, that what's at play here is that you look at subsection A, there is no ambiguity. It is entirely unremarkable that the Congress has said these particular felonies are always aggravated. Brook no quarrel with that. But we don't have that here with the New York misdemeanor, although obviously the district court did ultimately choose to treat it as an aggravated felony. But I think that does violence. I think that what that does is essentially to create a, for lack of a better term, maybe tail wag the dog, that because Congress was obviously ambiguous in one provision, that we're now going to introduce ambiguity into other provisions, because I would suggest rhetorically, isn't that why we're here? Because there's something ambiguous here, at least trying to square this all up. I think a much better approach is to limit the use of the term of art where the case law has suggested it does have a place, which is in subsection F. Now, I'm not suggesting to you that had I been deciding that case that I would have necessarily agreed with this court's opinion in Urias Escobar, and that is a case that basically had said, Judge Smith writing for the court had said, well, Congress meant more. Congress meant more. Aggravated felony must mean that these one-year misdemeanors are treated as felonies. But I don't read that case to suggest that this court has to apply that across the breadth of this definitional scheme, and it's an exhaustive definitional scheme. Should the court decide that it was felt constrained by this earlier opinion, Urias Escobar, the first thing that I would suggest is that you're not constrained at all. It would be limited on its facts. That was an entirely different statutory definition at play. And should the court suggest, no, we don't feel, the panel does not feel constrained. I would suggest that the court isn't constrained because we think there have been changes in the law. Now, the government says, and I'll certainly concede this to a degree, that the Supreme Court's opinion in Karashuri did not address this precise issue. No, it did not. But that's not to say that the language and the reasoning used in the Supreme Court's opinion doesn't have some play here. And I think that the play that we were addressing in the brief, and I'm not going to belabor this because it's in print and I'm the only thing standing between everyone and lunch, I suppose. But here's what's up. What I'm taking from the opinion, the Supreme Court's opinion, is that the federal government does not get to reach back and to try to transform state charging decisions to try to bring it within a federal definitional scheme. And that's what I think is going on here. And this is why we talked to you about Karashuri. We think that that works a sufficient change in law, that if this court were to decide that Urias Escobar somehow is controlling on the definitional issue, that there has been a sufficient change to allow you to depart from it. Because I do think that our suggestion as to the interpretation of the definition gives effect to each of the words, felony, aggravated, and all of the terms. And I don't see I don't see violence done between limiting the term of art proviso to subsection F. There was a flurry of 28 J letters. Well, I shouldn't say a flurry. We each had one that addressed whether or not the statute was divisible or was indivisible. My position, my suggestion to the court is that's basically a rabbit trail. I think that the work that's done in this case will deal with the term of art issue, what I've referred to as the broad facet here. But to the extent that the court were to concern itself with what is and what is indivisible, we would stand on Chambers as set out in the 28J letter. Now, if the court has no questions of me, I've made the point I wanted to make. I appreciate being allowed to come down on relatively short notice to talk about terms of art and what have you. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, sir. Mr. Couser.
Good afternoon, Your Honor. Susan Couser for the United States. Now, I'm the only person standing between you and lunch, unless Mr. Beard decides to get up again, which he may. Let me just talk briefly about the divisibility issue. I don't call it a rabbit trail. I put it before the court in my brief because I wanted the court to feel comfortable that there wasn't any kind of error here. I know that there's sensitivity to increasing offense levels by 8 levels and 16 levels when it's not clear that that was the right thing to do, and I wanted to put that in there. I will say, though, that it wasn't raised in the appellant's opening brief whether the statute was divisible or not, and it certainly wasn't raised below. So that issue is really, as a technical matter, waived on appeal. There wouldn't be any basis for the court to have to reach it. But I did want the court to feel comfortable that the district court had not made any kind of error in applying the modified categorical approach. And I'd be happy to talk about that issue as much as the court wants. But I'd like to focus on the question that was raised by the appellant in his brief, which is whether an aggravated felony, quote unquote, under 1101A43 has to be a felony. The entire body of the case law is against him on that. every circuit to have addressed the question has held that an aggravated felony does not have to be a felony. There's a case cited in my brief that cites all of those cases in a string cite, and that is there for the court to see. This court is among that phalanx of courts in the Urias Escobar case, holding that an aggravated felony does not have to be a felony under the way the statute is drafted. The Bureau of Immigration Appeals agrees that an aggravated felony does not have to be a felony in applying 1101A43 in its removal type proceedings. And in fact, it had earlier held, as Mr. Beard cited, that an aggravated felony did have to be a felony and then reversed course and said it does not have to be a felony in accordance with all of the circuit courts, and we are going to go along with that and believe that that is the correct analysis of 1101A43. And it is. I want to point out something that I did not put in my brief for the court's benefit. The definitions that are in the application notes to USSG 201.2 define the word felony in the normal way, that is an offense punishable by a term in prison of more than 1 year. But that definition specifically only applies to the use of the word felony in B1A and B1B and B1D. And there is a separate application note for aggravated felony, and it points readers and courts and litigants to 1101A43. That's the definition of aggravated felony. That, to me, is a very telling rationale for the sentencing guidelines. Do not want courts that are applying them to assume that an aggravated felony under 201.2B1C has to be a felony, because they do not apply the same definition of felony to that particular subsection. The bottom line, I think, there may be, you know, there can be talk about what were the facts underlying this sexual abuse of a minor. But, you know, what is good for the goose is good for the gander, and we don't go to the facts. We use a categorical approach. And I think that when you see that terminology, like this court held en banc in Rodriguez, sexual abuse of a minor under 1101A43, or under 1201.2B1A, where it's denominated as a crime of violence if it's a felony. This was not a felony, so it doesn't get the 16-level enhancement. But if it were a felony, it would get the 16-level enhancement. However, the bottom line is that are the elements of sexual abuse of a minor that are reflected in the generic meaning of that term, are they the same elements that are in the offense that Mr. Ramirez committed in New York? And they are. There hasn't ever been any question about that. It hasn't been litigated at all. There hasn't been any contest that what he did doesn't amount by its elements to sexual abuse of a minor. He was accused in New York of having sexual contact with a 15-year-old when he was 24. And the reason why those particular facts were alleged in that indictment in New York, or information it might have been, was that those were important to establishing what crime he had committed. Because if she had been more than 17, it wouldn't have been a crime. And if he had been only 4 years or more older than her, it wouldn't have been a crime. So the indictment or information, the charging instrument, alleges that she was 15 and he was 24, and they had sexual contact. And I think that this court's precedents about sexual abuse of a minor, including the Zavala-Staita case, are very clear that that counts, that, you know, a 24-year-old male having sexual contact, whether it's consensual in some sense or not, is sexual abuse of a minor. And it doesn't matter whether it's a misdemeanor or a felony. You just get to which levels of offense level enhancement are you going to apply based on the language of the sentencing guidelines. And in this case, it's quite clear that sexual abuse of a minor, because it was not a felony, could not get the 16-level enhancement, but it could get the 8-level enhancement because an aggravated felony does not have to be a felony under that provision. I want to speak just for a minute about the argument that the sentencing guidelines would not intend a one-time misdemeanant like Mr. Ramirez to be punished more harshly than a three-time misdemeanant who would only get four levels under 2L1.2B1E. But the answer to that question is simply that the guidelines say, if you committed an aggravated felony as defined in 1101A43, you're good for eight levels. It doesn't matter if it's a misdemeanor. The aggravated felonies that are listed there are so serious in the eyes of A, Congress, and then B, the Sentencing Commission, that we think that's eight levels worth. And that's a policy decision that the guidelines have made, and the court applied them accurately and appropriately and properly. And so the fact that B1E gives a catch-all provision for some offenses that might not fall under more serious enhancement provisions does not mean that an applicable more serious enhancement provision should not be applied. It's a catch-all. It's there for cases where there might happen to be a three-time misdemeanant who was not a sexual abuser of a minor. But Mr. Ramirez was, and so I believe that the eight levels were properly applied to him. I really think I've covered everything in my brief, and we've argued here a little bit. If the court doesn't have any questions, I'll just ask that the judgment be affirmed.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Gotch.
Thank you.
A noted jurist remarked earlier that we've got to stay within the real world. I'm very comfortable staying within the real world, and in the real world, in the practice of criminal law, felony has had a time-honored meaning. It means offenses that are punishable by more than a year. There is one area where perhaps there's some disagreement that I would have, and that is, of course, in subsection F, and we talked about, and I talked about that initially. That's where term of art is implicated. Where I disagree with the government to suggest that somehow term of art is so expansive it applies to all definitional schemes and that somehow Congress intended this, is that if you look at what Congress wrote when they said aggravated felony means, they didn't include that language. Had they said aggravated felony means any offense, ellipsis, then we would have known that everything that fell underneath that intro phrase would have that definitional scheme would have applied. We don't have that. The phalanx that I believe that my adversary is referring to, if I'm not mistaken, refers to cases that arose out of subsection F. And I'm the first to admit that subsection F has an inherent ambiguity written into it. If you read the congressional language, it doesn't make sense. I believe it's missing a verb. It talks about offenses punishable by a year when that has not been a time-honored understanding of the terms. Now, certainly Congress could change the definition of felony, but I would again suggest that had it meant to do so, it would have been at the front of this definitional scheme so that we would have known it applied to everything. Now, there's some talk a moment ago about the Sentencing Commission and what the Sentencing Commission has done that may not control the debate, but would certainly inform your thought processes. I would also point out, as we did, and I won't belabor it, the Commission shortly after your Urias-Escobar opinion began to set up gradations between crimes of violence, aggravated felonies, felonies in a misdemeanor scheme. I would submit, and I don't like to use the word clear, but I heard it a few times, so I'll jump in. I would think what is clear is that at least the Commission, in their informed capacity, recognized different degrees of culpability. They didn't stick with the old 16 level or four levels. They graded it out. They graded it out. This is one of those rare occasions when I'm able to tell the panel with absolute sincerity, I think our position, I think my client's position, does less violence to the stated text in the definitional scheme and does less violence, quite frankly, to our sensibilities. We would honor felony. We would honor aggravated. We would honor all the other terms, subsection F. It's a little bit of a hiccup there, but so be it. Congress wrote it that way. Instead, it's the United States that says, felony doesn't have to mean felony. Felony can mean anything in the absence of language that Congress meant for felony to mean anything.
Mr. Bridge, what would you suggest then would be the proper guidelines? What would be the total guidelines? If this is New York conviction is not an aggravated felony, how is it interpreted and what would be the appropriate guidelines?
Well, we would knock off, of course, the 8 would go away, would go back, and then the district court would be, the district court would have the first shot at how the, what the effect would be. And I'll have to be very candid with you, Judge Prado. Right now, the numbers are not coming up in my mind as to what the guideline level would be. So I'll have to demur there, although I can certainly run those figures and send it in separately if you would like. But in closing, we would simply ask that the court consider whether or not the introduction of greater ambiguity into the subsection A analysis is what's called for. I would suggest it's just the opposite. Thank you very much for your time and, again, for allowing us to come down on an expedited basis.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you to both sides. Appreciate the briefing and the oral argument. This concludes